People Movement would have a better opportunity to grow under a Trump presidency or under a Clinton presidency, assuming that one of those two will eventually be elected?
I don't think it makes any difference. The TPP is going to go through whether it's Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. Endless war is going to be continued whether it's Trump or Clinton. We're not going to get our privacy back whether it's under Clinton or Trump. The idea that at this point the figure in the executive branch exercises that much power, given the power of the war industry and Wall Street, is a myth.
Even on immigration. I'm sorry.
What? Even on immigration.
What? On immigration? I mean, let's look at Obama's record on immigration. Who's worse?
10 seconds.
I mean, you know, you can't get worse than Obama.
The
Democrats speak.
Robert Reich, 10 seconds.
I just want to say equating Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is absolute nonsense. Anybody who equates the two of them is not paying attention, and it's dangerous kind of talk.
That's not what I did.
We're going to have to leave it there, but this is a discussion that will continue. Chris Hedges, I want to thank you for being with us, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author of Wages of Rebellion, The Moral Imperative of Revolt, and former Clinton Labor Secretary Robert Reich, professor now at the University of California, Berkeley. His most recent book, Saving Capitalism. That does it for the broadcast. I'll be in Provincetown, Massachusetts, and Martha's Vineyard this weekend doing a talk back from the convention. Special thanks to Laura Deutsch, Gretchen Clausing, Brian Saunders, and the whole team here at Philly Camp. With Juan Gonzalez, I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 5 o'clock. Up next is the 2016 Democratic National Convention coverage, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Step House Networks, offering high-speed residential and business internet services throughout the Portland area. More information about Step House Internet Services is available at 503-548-2000 or at stephouse.net.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of One Flaming Arrow Intertribal Film Festival 2016, bringing Native American and Indigenous independent film to Portland, Oregon, July 28th through the 31st. Opening night at Clinton Street Theater with showings through the weekend at Hollywood Theater and Rainmaker Gallery. Please consider supporting independent media. More information can be found at oneflamingarrow.com.
Convention Center. This is Margaret Prescott. I'm here with Askia Muhammad. Askia,
it's a topsy-turvy day, more than yesterday, and it's due to get even more exciting before the evening is over.
Yeah. And in fact, we have some breaking news right now, even before we can go to the election roundup. We are now going to go to Alan Minsky, who is holed up in a building with some protesters. He is locked in, can't get out. Alan Minsky, where are you?
Right now, I am in the media center tent across from the Wells Fargo Center. It's a huge tent, and there are a huge number of Bernie Sanders delegates who walked out after the roll call vote. And they walked over to the media center where they have occupied this space with a sit-in. There are a few hundred delegates inside, a few hundred outside. And right now, the police and law enforcement are not allowing the delegates to leave. Only a few have been allowed to leave. And the protest was largely around the fairness or the perception that the primaries between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton were unfairly just weighted in favor of Hillary Clinton. Of course, there's been some evidence that has broken in recent days suggesting that that's not speculation, that the DNC, in fact, had put their fingers on the scale to favor Hillary Clinton. And again, a few hundred delegates walked out. Many of them taped their mouths. They showed signs of solidarity. They sat down. They gave a lot of media interviews, and very conspicuous that they came to the media. Now, I'm here with Norman Solomon, who is a Bernie Sanders delegate, and he is going to join us in a second. Right now, he's talking to the folks. Another media interview. But let me.
Alan, what we're going to do now is we're actually going to get some sound from some of those protesters. Let's go to that clip right now. Then we'll come back to you, Alan.
Peaceful protest getting arrested. Doors closed. Right over there.
In favor of going to the hotel.
Fight back. Stand up. Fight back. Stand up.
I'm a delegate from Colorado, Congressional District Number 2. Basically, we were told that if we did anything to disparage the party, if we basically endorsed another candidate or we talked about him openly on social media, that our credentials would be pulled and that we would not be able to vote.
All righty, some sound there from some of the protesters explaining, making their case. Alan Minsky, back to you.
Hello, Margaret.
You're live, Alan.
I'm live. Hey, so I'm going to try to break in on this interview and see if Norman Solomon can join us live on air with Pacifica Radio.
Okay.
He's talking right now with the real. Well, we had him live.
We're live
on national radio. And Norman Solomon, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Pacifica Radio. Please explain what the demonstration has been about and join Margaret live on air.
Hi. Well, we are right next to the aptly and unfortunately named Wells Fargo Center, where the Democratic National Convention is being held. And I suppose it was roughly an hour ago when the conclusion of the roll call vote took place and Hillary Clinton was formally nominated. And quite a few, I would say, initially 200 to 300 delegates. We're up in the, it's sort of like a baseball stadium where, you know, things are sold. It's sort of a circular, really wide hallway, whatever you call that, concourse. And people had assembled there and began to walk, had signs, Bernie signs, and some had tapes over their mouths, and began to chant, "This is what democracy looks like," and then walked outside and then walked silently, which I thought was very effective, for several minutes. Nobody speaking any words. And then moving into what is a fairly huge media center, and then sat down here and then stood up and then walking around. So anyway, Margaret, that's how I would describe how we got where we are now.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Norman Solomon, as you are there, and Alan Minsky, with these protesters on the floor, John Lewis is nominating Hillary. They are carrying on business as usual and really trying to dampen down the reality of that level of dissension. And what do you think is the end goal of these protesters?
Well, there's really a self-organizing ethos among a lot of the delegates who are dissenting. And my impression is that yesterday, when there was some negative reaction to booing and so forth, that people really tried to think creatively, okay, we don't really want to get in this push-pull of denunciation and so forth inside the hall and, you know, getting accused of, you know, being rude or whatever. But there are creative spaces that have to be created and taken and utilized. And I'm very fortunate that I'm standing next to someone, just by good fortune, who is the elected co-chair, we call her co-representative, of the entire Bernie Sanders delegation from the state of California. Her name is Karen Bernal. And I'll let her know that we're on live on Pacifica. And here's Karen Bernal.
All righty. Karen.
Hi.
What Eric Holder is on the floor right now. We are going to need to get some of that sound. But just give us a couple of minutes from you before we go to Eric Holder.
Well, I think that we did this to show that we can do things in a way that is both quiet, dignified, and respectful, and still make a tremendous statement. I feel that when asked, we were able to convey many of our grievances very effectively, very quietly. And there was great conversation, as you might imagine, that was had here in the media since we were literally locked in. So for me, witnessing the delegate count as it went from state to state, though it made me feel good to be able to cheer Senator Sanders on, it became clear that often with a superdelegate added vote, that any of the wins that Senator Sanders had enjoyed in some of the states was just put asunder because of the addition of the superdelegate count. There were states that where he had won convincingly, and still it was not reflected
for the delegate count.
Right. So a lot of support for Bernie there. We're going to be checking back in with you all to see what happens with, as the evening proceeds and whether or not you all will be allowed to leave and if the sitting will continue. But right now, Askia, how about giving our listeners a little sense of what's happening on the floor? Thank you all for joining us, by the way.
On the floor now, former Attorney General Eric Holder is speaking, and he's in the early part of the lineup. And so we're going to listen to what he has to say. And then since the demonstrators apparently are not going anywhere, we'll be able to come back to you.
General, I launched sweeping reforms of our federal criminal justice system and reduced its reliance on draconian mandatory minimum sentences. And as a result, we cut the federal prison population and the crime rate together for the first time in more than 40 years. Now, that's right. That's right. Despite the fiction and the fear-mongering you've heard from the other party's nominee, violent crime has gone down since President Obama took office. As president, Hillary will go even farther. She fought as a senator against sentencing disparities and racial profiling. She used her first major speech as a candidate to lay out a bold vision for criminal justice reform. As a presidential candidate, she has talked about systemic racism in a way that no one else has. And she will help our nation summon the courage to confront racial injustice and face down the legacies of our darkest past. Now, finally, at a time when the right to vote is under siege, when Republicans brazenly assault the most fundamental right of our democracy, passing laws designed to stop people from voting while closing locations in minority neighborhoods where people get the documents that they need to vote, we need a president sensitive to these echoes of Jim Crow. We need a president who holds the right to vote as sacred and stands firm against any kind of modern-day poll tax. My fellow Americans, Hillary Clinton will be that president. She will set a new standard for early voting. She will champion universal automatic registration. You turn 18, you're registered to vote. Because she knows, and everybody in this arena has to know this, the best way to defend the right to vote is by exercising it. Throughout history, too many people have sacrificed too much, fought wars, and braved fire hoses, dogs, bullets, and bombs for this generation to sit on the sidelines. Never forget that we are heirs to a revolution that began just 5 miles from where we gather this week, and that the choice we face in this pivotal election is about much more than politics. It's about the arc that we are on as a nation, the composition of our character as a people, and the ideals of equality, opportunity, and justice that have always made America great. These are the ideals for which Hillary Clinton has fought her entire life. This is the fight that she will continue when we make history by electing her the 45th president of the United States of America. Thank you.
So there we hear the former Attorney General Eric Holder is speaking about law, speaking about the Clinton platform, but does he really have standing or does he have, I guess, credibility to be able to speak on these issues considering his departure in the way that he departed and landing with the golden parachute?
Right, and what we'd like to do is to bring in Bill Gallegos, who is part of our convention coverage team. He is not with us in Philadelphia, but following everything very closely. Bill Gallegos, welcome.
Thank you so much, Margaret. Yeah, I'm over here living through our wildfires. We got about 40,000 acres that are on
based in California.
Fire here, so it's another sign of the global warming crisis that we have to deal with.
Right. And were you able to hear just a little bit? I mean, we just heard from the former Attorney General Eric Holder, and just your take. You likely heard at the beginning of the hour that Bernie Sanders delegates have walked out. There is more unrest. There was unrest last night. And in fact, we're going to play a little clip. If we have that from what happened last night outside the hall. And then, Bill, just to get a sense from you of your take on how it's going thus far. Do we have that? Okay.
It was an organic organization that took place when it became very evident that insiders were trying to direct things in a way that did not represent what the duly elected delegates, why we're participating in this. I'm a single father of two kids. I can't afford to be here. I'm here anyway because Bernie Sanders promised all of us an opportunity to engage in political agency and to contribute our ideas to a forum that theoretically is supposed to be about that. We did not sign up to have our voices edited out and to have a unity frame, which is entirely phony, but when you look at the news, that's what they're projecting.
What do you
think?
This
is scary.
Say again?
This is scary.
What's the next step?
The next step is to express all of the agenda items and the things that the people that elected the delegates to come here, they want to express all those things. And every state has a representative, and they're going to talk about from their grassroots corners of this beautiful country. They're going to talk about the concerns they have with our democracy. They're going to talk about the concerns they have with basically the agenda of the political revolution that parallels Bernie Sanders' agenda, but which has now been abandoned by the Democratic National.
I walked out because I'm here as a Bernie Sanders delegate, and the DNC has yet to even acknowledge that we even exist. This entire convention has been a campaign commercial for Hillary Clinton, and you know, we represent our constituents that have worked just as hard, if not harder, than Hillary and her delegates this election cycle. The WikiLeaks have shown that a lot of this election was not representative of our votes, and then they want to put Donald Trump as the reason to vote for Hillary when the polls show that Bernie Sanders is the only one that can beat Hillary hands down. And so we're leaving because we don't have a voice inside, so we've come out here to be heard.
Okay, that's actually a clip from the protesters are sitting in right now, and the one we heard earlier was from last night. So, Bill Gallegos, you have a sense then of what is happening here. Your take on how this has gone thus far. What are we looking at here?
Well, there's a number of things that strike me. One is that I think the anger of the supporters of Senator Sanders is entirely understandable and entirely justified. The campaign always had to push against extra obstacles and challenges because it was pretty much set up by the Democratic leadership to support Hillary Clinton. So I think that's been pretty obvious from Jump Street, and Senator Sanders has pointed that out in terms of how the debates are scheduled and so on. And so I think there's this is kind of the chickens coming home to roost. On the other hand, I think there's a certain amount of political naivete among some of the supporters of Senator Sanders. If they thought that we were going to effect a profound transformation of the Democratic Party with a 4 or 5 month campaign, that just wasn't ever going to happen. This is an institution which is one of the two political parties controlled by corporate America. But with the Democratic Party reliant to a great degree on working class voters and communities of color, which gives us the leverage that we don't have with the Republican Party. So I think within that context, Senator Sanders has done a remarkable job of moving the conversation to the left and opening up political space for all social movements. I think that's just been of enormous value. And the fact that he has pledged to create an organization that will work independently of the Clinton campaign and continue organizing for the social and economic and political program that he advocated throughout the election and beyond, I think is a very, very important opportunity for left and progressives in this country. And I think we need to keep in mind, if anyone watched the Republican convention and assumed that there was maybe going to be some conciliatory moves to the center on the part of Donald Trump, that did not happen. They played to their neo-fascist, racist, and reactionary base. And this has incredible meaning for millions and millions of people here and abroad. So I'll just give you one example. Advocating ethnic cleansing of more than 11 million people. That is a for real for millions of people in this country, including me, people that I know, people in my family. That is a for real. You know, the millions of people, mostly women and people of color, that work for a minimum wage, to have someone who says we should roll back the minimum wage, that is a for real. We can't ignore that. So I think sometimes the people that are advocating that they sit it out or support a third-party candidate or something, I think they're out of touch with the really the potential impact on tens of millions of the most oppressed people in this country and working-class people in this country. Then I think we have to keep that in mind. That doesn't mean we lose our critical faculty. There should be incredible pressure on the Clinton campaign to continue pushing them, especially on foreign policy. The foreign policy platform of the Democratic Party is terrible. But on the domestic policy, the Sanders campaign was able to win even more concessions than Jesse Jackson was in 1988. That is incredibly important political space for labor and other and communities of color, the Black Lives Movement, the climate justice and environmental justice movement, of which I'm a part, the Chicano liberation struggle. This is an important political space, and we have to use it. We have to use it to really defeat the Trump candidacy and hopefully pass progressive issues like renewing the Tax the Rich initiative here, Proposition 55 in California, and really working for progressive candidates at the local and statewide level. So I think this is a very, very important election, and we don't have the luxury to sit it out. I think that would be a really horrendous political mistake. The Trump candidacy is for real. I know I underestimate. I never thought he had a chance in hell of becoming the Republican Party presidential candidate, but he did. And it just reveals the depth of disaffection, alienation, and racism in this country. And that is a very dangerous current because a lot of those folks, they vote at a higher percentage and higher proportions than our community does, a lot because of the voting restrictions that we face. So we got to get out there and take this seriously and see it as a component of building the longer-term social movement that Senator Sanders has inspired.
Bill Gallegos, it's Askia Muhammad. The question, everyone says exactly what you're saying. We've got to do this. We've got to do it. We've got to do it locally. We've got to do it nationally. How? What is the next step for the disaffected Bernie delegates to not put Donald Trump in office and send the country to hell on a rocket? At the same time, not to just concede and roll over for the Clinton bandwagon?
Well, I think there's a number of approaches that we have to take to this. One, I think as much as folks can, they should really try to work independently. So they're still working towards the same objective, but try to work independently. Independent voter organization, voter mobilization drives, voter registration drives, and so on. So we build up our power as an independent political force. So, for example, you have organizations like California Calls here in California, a statewide progressive voter network. So I think that's a very, very good vehicle for us to organize in that particular arena. I think some of the labor unions, the nurses and others that have been very strong supporters of Senator Sanders' campaign, should really continue to work in that arena. Labor is an extremely important arena. Even with all of the defeats it suffered and the setbacks, it still has more members, more resources, more reach than any other social movement in the country. And it really has a lot of meaning, especially for low-wage workers who have been fighting for an increase in the minimum wage. So I think labor has a particular role to play in really understanding not only a specific labor agenda for increasing the minimum wage, but for supporting an end to deportations, for a comprehensive immigration policy, for women's right to choose, for free college tuition, And I think especially we have to really call the Democrats out on their militaristic imperialist foreign policy.
Right. Bill Gallegos, hold that thought. The mothers of children who were killed by police are now taking the stage. Hello. We're going to be coming back to you.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Hey, I need you all to hear me tonight. Give me 2 moments to tell you how good God is. Whew. Hallelujah. Give me a moment to say thank you. We are not standing here because he's not good. We're standing here because he's great. Whew. 1 year ago, yesterday, I lived the worst nightmare anyone could imagine. I watched as my daughter, Sandra Bland, was lowered into the ground in a coffin. She was my fourth of 5 daughters, and she was gone. No, not on administrative leave, but on permanent leave from this earth. Found hanging in a jail cell after an unlawful traffic stop and an unlawful arrest. 6 other women have died in custody that same month. Kendra Chapman, Alexis McGovern, Sarah Lee Circlebear, Raynette Turner, Raukina Jones, and Joyce Cornell. So many of our children are gone, but they are not forgotten. I am here with Hillary Clinton tonight. Because she is a leader and a mother who will say our children's names. She knows that when a young black life is cut short, it's not just a loss. It's a personal loss. It's a national loss. It's a loss that diminishes all of us. What a blessing tonight to be standing here so that Sandy can still speak through her mama. And what a blessing it is for all of us that we have the opportunity. If we seize it, we gotta seize it. To cast our votes for a president who will help lead us down the path toward restoration and change.
You don't stop being a mom when your child dies. You don't stop being a parent. I am still Jordan Davis's mother. His life ended the day that he was shot and killed for playing loud music. But my job as his mother didn't. I still wake up every day thinking about how to parent him, how to protect him and his legacy, how to ensure that his death doesn't overshadow his life. Here's what you don't know about my son. When Jordan was little, he wouldn't eat a popsicle unless he had enough to bring out to his friends. He loved practical jokes. He liked having deep conversations with me about our love for God and how God could allow such pain and suffering. I lived in fear that my son would die like this. I even warned him that because he was a young black man, he would meet people who didn't value him or his life. That is a conversation that no parent should ever have with their child. Hillary Clinton isn't afraid to say that Black Lives Matter. She isn't afraid to sit at a table with grieving mothers and bear the full force of our anguish. She doesn't build walls around her heart. Not only did she listen to our problems, she invited us to become a part of the solution. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to keep telling our children's stories, and we're urging you to say their names. We're going to keep building a future where police officers and communities of color work together in mutual respect to keep children like Jordan safe. The majority of police officers are good people doing a good job. And we're asking, and we're also going to keep using our voices and our votes to support leaders like Hillary Clinton, who will help us protect one another so that this club of heartbroken mothers stops growing.
First of all, I'd like to say it's an honor to be here, to stand with these mothers and be amongst you. I am an unwilling participant in this movement. I would not have signed up for this or any other mother that's standing here with me today. But I am here today for my son, Trayvon Martin, who is in heaven. And also for his brother, Javaris Fulton, who is still here on earth. I did not want this spotlight, but I will do everything I can to focus some of this light on the pain of a path out of the darkness. Hillary Clinton has the compassion and understanding to support grieving mothers. She has the courage to lead the fight for common sense gun legislation. She has a plan to divide that so often exists between law enforcement and the communities that they serve. This isn't about being politically correct. This is about saving our children. That's why we're here tonight with Hillary Clinton. And that's why, in memory of our children, we are imploring you, all of you, to vote this election day. Hillary is one mother who can ensure our movement will succeed. I want to thank you for standing with us and supporting us, and we'd like to leave with you what God has given us: strength, love, and peace. Thank you.
All right, though, it seems as though that was the round of the mothers whose children were killed by the police. We heard from Sandra Bland's mother. We heard from Jordan Davis's mother. And finally, from Trayvon Martin's mom. And
we've got with us here
Yeah.
Garland Nixon, who has an extensive record involving the ACLU, with Homeland Security, and with law enforcement in the state of Maryland, who has worked with these mothers. He's a Pacifica correspondent. He's worked with some of these mothers, and he really has an incredible story to tell about his relationships with them and their relationship with nominee Clinton.
Yeah, in fact, when I working for the ACLU last year, one of the things I worked on was getting laws changed in Maryland, worked with the legislature, and worked with these mothers. I coordinated with them for testifying before legislature. And one of my friends, Marion Gray Hopkins, she lost her son, I believe it was in 1999, to police violence, unarmed. And she told a story recently with me on Russian radio, and here's what she said, and I guess it really is not going to actually kind of work very well with the story tonight on the floor. But what Marion said was that she went to an event. Secretary Clinton was there, and they spoke. All of them were told to write their story up, to write something to Secretary Clinton, and to personally hand that to her. So she did, and they were all told that they would get a personal response within a couple weeks from Secretary Clinton. So she did. She took the pictures. She listened to it, and she made some comments to me. I'm not going to say one way or the other. Marion's not here to speak for herself, but she made some comments about what she thought about it. But the one thing that she told me was they were told you will get a personal response from Secretary Clinton. That was many months ago, and she says she doesn't know any of the mothers, and she definitely knows that she never got a personal response. What that means, I don't know, but one of the issues that I bring up working with the ACLU and trying to get specifically working to try to get legislation changed is that in events like this, when the lights are on, all too often the politicians will talk about how they're going to help and how they're going to work and all the photo ops. But when you go to get the legislation changed, the FOP is in the room with them before you get out of the room, helping them write whatever legislation is going to change. So it sounds good, but I never get real hopeful from these kinds of things.
Garland Nixon is a Pacifica reporter. Margaret, we have one of the mothers on the phone with us.
Yes, we do. And we want to get her reaction to what she heard this evening. We'd like to welcome the mom of Alan Bluford, who was killed by police in Oakland, California. Geraldine Bluford, thank you for joining us.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
You know, Geraldine, just first of all, we do want to hear a bit of what happened to your son. But just in response to what you heard, I mean, listening to these mothers, and my heart goes out to them. I can't be in your place or in the place of these mothers. Clearly, what was absent, though, one would not have known about police involvement in the murders of their children and listening to these presentations this evening. Geraldine.
Yes. Well, my heart goes out to the mothers. I'm very proud of the job that they are doing. I know some of them personally, and I know they understand my pain, what it's like to have your son stolen from you. With that being said, sometimes as mothers, I mean, it's not just sometimes, as mothers who are grieving our babies, the pain is so hard that you will do whatever it takes to make a difference. Now, the way that you hurt, you want to do anything you can to make a change. So if somebody does come up and say, I got an idea, and you know that this thing has been over and over and over and over again, the rates that we are using our black boys, it's like genocide against our people. And the thing is, we know that this is what we've lived with through generations. And it's not like we're okay with it or anything like that, but I'm saying with the mothers pain and hurt, you got to do anything possible to try to make it better. Because the way that the pain hurts from the loss of a child, you don't want that on nobody. Now, I, for everybody really in a perfect world, would think that that is going to happen, that they are going to come and make policy change to right the wrongs and give us justice for our children. If Hillary has a plan to do it and it can be done and she's really standing with us as mothers that are hurting, the people that are on the stage, yes, we are proud of the voice because at least some of us are being heard. But there's a lot of mothers out there who don't have a spotlight and they can't share their voice, but we all share the pain. So I'm saying I'm glad for the platform, and I hope Hillary do what she's supposed to do. But I'm not saying that I am personally convinced that when she came with a policy and I knew it was going to happen, she'd get my vote. But I have to have a clear, it has to be very clear, because the stakes of our other sons and grandsons are too great. And it would be terrible for us not to be able. We have the platform. It can be done. It can be done, because with God, we can do anything. Now, we have to stand on our faith. That's how we get through.
Mrs.
But
Bluford,
I'm saying it has to be a clear change in policy. It has to happen.
Mrs. Bluford, when you mentioned that not all the mothers have been identified and that there are many others who are suffering and in pain, one of the groups of mothers and victims that we don't hear from often is Native Americans. Jay Winter Nightwolf is here. Talk about us briefly about Native Americans who've been killed by in these inhuman ways.
Yeah, and also, Jay, Geraldine Bluford made mention of genocide, and we certainly know when it comes to the First Nations and Indigenous people what has happened in terms of your people. So I wondered if you would respond to what she said and also what you heard on the floor from these mothers.
Well, I have the greatest respect for these mothers that have come forth to talk about the loss of their children. But in Indian country, all over Indian country, there have been more murders of Native American children than there has been of black children. And this is not to say who got murdered the most. It's all wrong. All of it's wrong. But what bothers me is the cover-up that these police departments do in hiding the facts, even if it's on camera, and even with eyewitnesses, of how they just continue to get away with murder. Now, you spoke of genocide. Genocide has been in existence for over 400 years when they came here, the Europeans came here. The problem is, there are many problems. There are many facets to all of this. And one of them are the police. When you hire a man that is straight out of combat from a war zone and not do something to help him transition back into reality, because anybody that's ever been in the military knows that you are dehumanized and a life is worth nothing. And you spend 12, 18, 24 months in combat killing people, then there's a problem there. So what is America going to do about mental health in helping these veterans that they just pick up and hire right off the bat without any question? That's my question. The murder of all men, young men and women, by the police in America is wrong. It's wrong. And when you're caught in that act, and all you get is a 2-week paid vacation, and then come back and have the FOP to pay for your attorney, and taxpayers pay for the settlement with families, that's all wrong. So what is this? Is this a card, a go card, that says, go on and kill somebody, it's okay, we're going to take care of it, and we're going to take care of you as well?
Right. Thank you. Thank you for that, Jay Winter Nightwolf. Geraldine Buford, can we just have a final comment from you? What we want to do is we have an interview that we did with Uncle Bobby and Sister Beatrix X, who are family members, uncle and aunt of Oscar Grant, who was killed in Oakland. And let's have a final thought from you before we go to that clip.
Mrs. Buford. Excuse me, just for a second, Mrs. Buford, I want to remind our listeners that you're in tuned to Pacifica Radio's live coverage from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia, and this is part of it. Tonight, the mothers are talking. We have one of the mothers, Mrs. Buford, on the line. Go ahead, please.
I just want to end with, you know, my son was killed by an officer. His name was Miguel Maso of Oakland, California Police Department. He was, he did two tours in Iraq, and he did have the mindset of militarized policing. My son was racially profiled. It was three young men, and they drew one on the ground, drew one against the fence. My son ran. The police officer chased him five city blocks. He brandished his weapon, shooting himself. And then my son fell. He stood over my son while bleeding and shot him in the heart. My son, before he did all this, he turned off his lapel camera. I must make that point. I agree with the brother before, because when the police came, after he murdered my son, he called to his brothers in blue. They picked him up and took him to the hospital on the gun inflicted shots